Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Marianne Navarro, filling in for Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. From La Llorona to El Cucuy, urban legends and folktales are passed down orally from generation to generation. A uniquely South San Antonio urban legend is one of the Donkey Lady. In the tale, a quiet woman faces an intense moment of violence that reverberates across the community. The new book, The Donkey Lady, A Graphic Parable, reclaims the tale and adapts it for children by highlighting themes of defiance, survival, and humanity. We're speaking with the book's author, Carmen Tafoya, and its illustrator, Thelma Ortiz Muraida. Tafoya, a San Antonio native, recounts her own experiences with the legend and how the book came to be.
I think the first time I heard it, I was 8 years old, and it was on the playground. And I was very, very west side, and some of my little friends had cousins and grandparents on the south side. And they came back from one of those weekends and told me all about the Donkey Lady. And it was very scary, but it was also very intriguing because you would hear them say, "Pobrecita." And so as years passed, I often wondered, because there wasn't a lot of information out about the Donkey Lady other than the Donkey Lady Bridge, and which people, all the people that went and parked their cars on the railroad tracks for the little angelitos also went to the Donkey Lady Bridge to see what would happen if they tried to cross. Yeah, as with most folklore, it varies so much, and each generation enriches it. Each generation adds their own story. And to quote the famous Bob Flynn of San Antonio, all legends are true. They start with something that happened, and people talk about what happened, and then it begins to fit with the values and the needs and the urgencies of the people. It begins to change details to make it more relevant to each generation. So I wanted to go back to the earliest version of the Donkey Lady that I had heard and find out what was in common between these old tales. If this happened, I figure sometime in the early 1900s, sometime before 1940, definitely before 1940, because some of the informants did say, No. Yo oí esto cuando estaba chiquita. Ya conocí el cuento ya cuando comencé la escuela. I knew this story ever since I was tiny, before I started school. So I'd kind of gauge it by their ages. And so I said, okay, this has got to be at least as old as the 1930s, possibly earlier. And I listened to what was in common. And they all had three things in common. She lived alone, so she was vulnerable. She was of mixed race. They weren't sure if she was black or brown or Indian, or and you know, people came in with different versions of it. And then the third thing was that she had been burnt, horribly burnt in a fire. In some of the versions, she dies. In some of the versions, she lives. There's never a clear explanation of why the donkey is involved. Many of them attributed it to the looks of her face as she was being burnt, or the sound of her screams when she was being burnt. But there was always a moment of silence in there when they'd say, "La quemaron, pobrecita." So there was compassion coming through. So I thought, well, they're telling this scary story, but the monster in the story is not her. As time passed, as we moved into the 21st century, and cell phones and social media began to replace the folk stories that grandparents told, I noticed that a lot of the legends were being blended, and they were talking about the Donkey Lady with the similarities to La Llorona, and they were kind of becoming the same story. And I thought, no, this is not La Llorona, this is the Donkey Lady. I know La Llorona, she lived in my neighborhood. So I was always curious about this. And as I talked to more people and found the older people's versions, there was a distinctive sense between the two. So one night, the story popped out, as stories sometimes do. The words that I used probably aren't the same words that the original person, whom we now call the Donkey Lady, used. But hopefully the spirit of the story is the same, because I tried to listen to the silences. And when you listen to folklore, and I've collected lots and lots of folklore over the years, it's been my richest source of cultural grounding, of cultural values clarification. As I collect folklore, I've learned you have to listen to the silences, what's being said in the silences. So I tried to give it relevance to today by staying true to the spirit of the original. That's how the book came about. The legend, I've done some research. Thelma has done some visual research, and Thelma also, my good comadre and artist and illustrator of many of my books, she also went and did artistic research, visual research at the Donkey Lady Bridge.
Tell me a little bit about that research, Thelma, and what you remember of the legend and what you found.
Well, it was my father that really told me all these stories. He was so big into telling us a lot of human stories of people in the West Side, on the South Side. He grew up close to Floresville, and he would listen to corridos and stuff. And when he would take us as a family just driving along the South Side, there was a point where we crossed the Donkey Lady Bridge, and he told us briefly about it. We were young, so I don't think he made it scary for us in that there was a woman here who lived in this area, and that she was burned. And I know that sparked my curiosity. But at the same time, they say, well, you can hear her sometimes speaking at night. Those stories sort of connected with me in the things that he described of the land. And I wanted to even bring that out in the illustrations that I did, where there's this vast countryside, the beauty of this, the pastures, and even, you know, horses, chickens, donkeys, everything. My father has influenced me in my art, but I also researched, how am I going to convey this story in the right medium? I know a lot of children's books are, you know, in color and bright and cheery, but there's also something deeper in this story, and I felt I needed to use one of the earliest form of medium, and that's charcoal. So I drew the whole story in charcoal and pastel. What's beautiful about charcoal is the values that you get of the deepest black, and in contrast to the white, you know. And so that those shadings kind of felt I needed to tell the story in that way. So I chose that medium.
And I noticed that you start to bring in a little bit more color with the Donkey Lady herself. So the fire at the end, when we see the Donkey Lady, there's a little bit of green, but it definitely still has those elements of feeling like a pasture, feeling like, you know, you're looking back and you're seeing a picture that dates back centuries, right?
Yeah, I wanted to suggest a little bit of color because it's a little bit of that human side of the story. And so maybe I get it a little bit more intense later, especially when I'm portraying the fire. And even at the end, where it's a totally different time period. So that's where it changes. I love charcoal. I love the drawing. Drawing is just a beautiful way of just expressing, you know, the actual story, the text.
And I think that that's something that you capture so starkly in the images and in the pages. When you were sketching this out using charcoal, tell me a little bit about that process of hearing the words and reading the words that Carmen had for you and putting the images that you had onto a page and actually rounding out the story and adding to the story with the images that you had.
The story was in my head for a long time. I guess like with other story or any painting I do, I have to, it just embodies me. You know, I have to feel that what I'm doing is believable. It's believable how it's portrayed, but it's also believable to me. And in telling that story in charcoal, I wanted the freedom of the drawing, of the lines to flow, whether it was creating the wind or even a gesture in someone's face. Those lines are part of the story. And within those lines, you see shadows and shapes that sort of like give a fullness to the story that is being created. So I loved the drawing aspect. I've always drawn since I was little, you know. Initially I was told, don't go outside the line. I said, well, no, I'm going to go beyond the line. And I think this story is very symbolic for me and very allegorical. I just love that kind of portrayal and playfulness and just the conflict too that charcoal can give you.
And I've got to say that Thelma's paintings, her sketches in this have been so realistic that we did a sneak preview reading at the World Heritage Center. And we had numerous people in the audience come up and say afterwards to me, oh my God, that picture on that page, that I've seen that place. I know that place. So she actually was able to reach a collective memory and a collective culture of the south side of San Antonio, that people would feel that she had captured their history, their story in some way in her illustrations. And I asked specifically that Thelma be the artist for this work because I knew she would give that depth, that cultural depth to it.
Former San Antonio and Texas poet laureate Carmen Tafoya collaborated with artist Thelma Ortiz Moreira for The Donkey Lady, A Graphic Parable. When we come back, how urban legends become a part of cultural identity.
When culture passes on these legends, the reason people repeat them is because they find meaning in them. If they didn't, they wouldn't remember the story, they wouldn't care about it. But something about the story impacts them so heavily that they have to repeat it to others.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Have a property that's past its prime? Consider donating it to Texas Public Radio. It's hassle-free, and you may qualify for a tax write-off, too. Learn more at tpr.careasy.org/real-estate-donation. Consider donating it to Texas Public Radio.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Marianne Navarro, in for Norma Martinez, with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Many San Antonio children have long heard the whispered tale of the Donkey Lady. Her spirit is set to haunt her namesake, the Donkey Lady Bridge, on the city's south side. The new young adult fiction, The Donkey Lady, A Graphic Parable, restores the Donkey Lady's humanity and invites children and adults alike to reconsider her story through a different lens. San Antonio poet Carmen Tafoya wrote the book with illustrations from Thelma Ortiz Moraida. Tafoya explains how lessons learned from urban legends and folklore can carry relevance to the world today.
People often forget that culture isn't just an incidental, like whether you wear a blue dress or a red dress on a particular day. Culture is a survival kit, and it's what our families and our communities give us to help us survive the next century. It's the things they've learned in life that kids never want to hear their parents say, well, when I was small, blah, 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 happened. But they'll listen to a story. And folk legends become a form of parable. And we have called this, the Donkey Lady, a graphic parable, because parables cause you to reflect on a moral dilemma, to come up with your own ethical solution. They don't tell you the moral of the story. You figure it out yourself. And a lot of urban legends are parables. But in particular, when culture passes on these legends, the reason people repeat them is because they find meaning in them. If they didn't, they wouldn't remember the story, they wouldn't care about it. But something about the story impacts them so heavily that they have to repeat it to others. When you do that with a folk legend, you're passing on ethical considerations they may not have thought of. You're passing on character traits that you may not have seen pulled out so much. One of the things I think about when I write anything that's going to be read by children, this book is for children and adults. We have a warning at the beginning that says, you know, don't, you know, there, it does portray violence, it does portray hatred and prejudice, but it also portrays kindness and a oneness with nature and an acceptance of things and human beings' differences. It shows both sides. So in here I say, well, if you don't want to show this to the very young child, you know, be careful who you show this to. Either very young children or very close-minded adults would not be good prospects for reading this book, you know. But what it is doing, it's giving messages. And I'm always looking for what are the messages we're giving our children. We're giving the children that somebody's so wonderful at the end of the book because they won the battle. Is that the message? So if you win, you're wonderful, and if you lose, you're not. I'm very picky about what messages I want to be in literature, period, but especially literature that's going to be read in any way by children or young adults. So in this, there are messages. She is different. She lives alone. The community whispers about her. They think she's weird. She must come from someplace far away. She doesn't talk much. You know, maybe she doesn't know how to talk. Maybe she comes from a place so far away she's not even human. And her responses to that show us options, show children and adults options. And what happens when someone is saying all kinds of ugly things about you, saying you must be a witch and you must not even be human? As she responds, she hears all this talk, and she hears what they're saying about she's from a foreign country so far away that people there are not even human beings, and she says, nonsense. All human beings are human beings. And when she hears ugly things said about her, she says, it doesn't matter what they think. What I know should be more important than what they think. And she goes on home to talk to the trees and thank the breeze and thank the birds for singing and thank the plants for growing. She has her very rich, full communication, but it's with her natural environment.
Sometimes when you think of a book that's geared towards young adults or young children, some people are very quick to dismiss it and say, you know, this is just a children's book. But the lessons that are in a children's book, a young adult's graphic parable, a novel, carry so much weight. Like you said, there are themes of prejudice, of hatred, of violence, but there's also redemption. There is also resilience. There is also kindness that one of the characters shows to the Donkey Lady. So using it as, or having it as a young adult's novel, a children's book, can sometimes reach a further audience than having it as an adult tale, right?
And that said, this is a scary story, but it's not scary because of who the Donkey Lady is. It's scary because of the violence that's perpetrated against her. That is a very scary point. But we live in a scary world, and children will have to live in lives where scary things do happen. We can protect the very young, but once a child starts to make friends or read books or hear the world around them, they're going to encounter some of these issues. And this gives them a way to work it through more positively in a way that that we can understand, okay, this tragedy occurred. It was horrible. It was an act of violence. This should not have happened. But nature has a way of reclaiming things, just like human beings and human culture has a way of reclaiming stories. So this is a reclaiming of the Donkey Lady as a human being with positive traits.
And I think, too, in stories like this, whether, you know, for children as adults, it would inspire dialogue mm-hmm. for people, even a parent to a child, to understand some of the issues that surround us in daily life. But to have that discussion would be really valuable, especially in a children's book. But it's also an adult book as mm-hmm. well. You know, it gives us that sense of like, wow, this really made me think. I really need to do something or need to be aware of these things more. And books should do that.
And it's a story of resistance as well. In fact, Thelma's art exhibit based on illustrations from the book is called Resistance because she answers back. She's very quiet. She doesn't bother with them. When they're whispering among themselves, that's their problem, not hers. But when they come to demand her land, this is ours, we're taking it. Now you get out, you old witch. She answers very calmly, no, sir.
No, sir.
This is mine, and here I'll stay, where the birds and the trees and the wind know my name. And that becomes her resistance. But at the end of the story, which I'm not going to, you know, blow the
ending. Don't give it away.
But the reader is invited to become part of that resistance of being able to say when injustice happens, no, this is ours. And we have a right to stay where the birds and the wind and the trees know our names. That is a message where we identify with the character in the story. We see the positive traits in her. We understand that something bad has happened to her. But then we take up the song. We take up the burden. We carry the responsibility to stand up tall and proud and stand for what is right and just.
And I think that that also goes to show the lasting power of these legends, of these folklores, of these mm-hmm. these stories that we hold so dear to us and that get adapted in ways like this, is that they're pertinent back then, they're pertinent to the moment that we find ourselves in now, and those same themes will be pertinent and relevant in the years and decades and generations to come. So the lasting power of a story, of a folklore, of a cuento, really goes far beyond just reading the story, but it sticks around with a child, it sticks around with an adult more often.
Mm-hmm. And the violence is not pre-planned, and I think people have to understand this too, how mob mentality works. You know, it starts just with criticizing her for being different. Oh, she's not married. She lives alone. How come she lives alone? You know, how come she doesn't talk to us? We can't figure out if she's black or brown or white. All these snippety little rumors, how that grows into a sense of right. We have the right to take what's hers because she's different anyway. She doesn't belong here. And then from that, it's almost accidental. It is not premeditated. It happens, and suddenly there's a fire, and suddenly she's burning, and they're screaming, and they're kind of in shock at what happened themselves. So that shows, I think, adults and children some of the situations that we encounter in everyday life, how small things can escalate into large. And yet there's a beautiful sense of nature, of speaking with nature, of protecting nature, of protecting the planet that we live on, of protecting all of its creatures. And Thelma just enhanced that beautifully. She made it happen, so much so that I'm always most proud. I don't want to blow the ending, but I'm always most proud of the last page, the last illustration, because the world is beautiful and growing and abundant and loud. It has claimed its own voice in a way that lasts.
Carmen, would you be willing to give a reading of a page or two of the book or a section of the book?
Okay. This early in the book, and she's taken her beautiful produce to the little local store to leave it there and get her money for it and go on home. And there's a crowd of people looking askance at her and whispering about her in the background. They did not like the way she lived alone. They did not like that she wasn't married. They did not like that she looked different from them. And they began to make up stories about her. They said she was a troublemaker. They said she was a witch. They said she came from some foreign country so far away that the people there were not even human beings. She began to hear what they'd whisper when she brought her produce to town to sell. Nonsense, she thought. All human beings are human beings, no matter where you come from or what color you are. But she just left her crops at the general store and took her money and her thoughts on home. It doesn't matter what they think, she said. What I know should be more important than what they think. And she went on home to talk to the trees and whisper to the plants. Her corn grew tall and her tomatoes were bursting with good health. When she saw her watermelon vines look sad, she watered them. And when she saw her carrots grow wilty, she shaded them. She had the most beautiful garden they had ever seen. And when she took her produce to the general store, everyone bought it up fast. But some of the neighbors were jealous. Mr. Tuckett, whose crops used to be the best, thought his tomatoes should be prettier than hers, and his corn should grow taller than hers. After all, he said, she was just a woman, and everyone knew women weren't as smart as men. "Hm," said his wife, "she sure knows better than you how to make corn grow tall and tomatoes grow big." And they start saying, you know, we ought to have the land that the lady uses. It should belong to us, not to someone who's all mixed brown and black and white. And Mrs. Tuckett heard them talking that way and say, what does color have to do with anything? She's not hurting anybody. We have plenty of crops to feed ourselves, and I don't want to move to a different field. But the men didn't listen. They were too busy dividing up the lands that belonged to La Callada and deciding which one of them would get what.
Is there anything that you all want to leave off on? Anything that I haven't asked? Anything that you just want to leave off on before we finish up?
Going back to the process of drawing, and I think it is probably even with a writer when you're telling, writing the story, is the feelings that you go through in putting it together. I wanted to feel the calmness. I wanted to sense the beauty. But there was also a side of me where I had to get angry and upset, and that had to be conveyed in the artwork. It was a little challenging at times, but I think it all came out well.
Yeah. I think what I've been happiest about is the response of the people of San Antonio who recognize something from their past. This is an echo of the past, and I do like to record a lot of our folklore, past and present. People think that the past is done with and we don't have to worry about it, but the past is with us. The echo of the past is with us all the time. It's part of the music of our present. It's part of what forms the future. And so we can use that knowledge of the past. It empowers us. And we saw that when we did the sneak preview reading. The people were so excited. They kept asking questions. It was beautiful to see that fullness, as if there had been a hunger they weren't even aware of, and then they hear this and they recognize it from their past, or they recognize the elements of it, or they recognize the values in it, and it empowers human beings. And if there's one thing that I think that most artists really would love, is to see that their work helps people to empower themselves.
Carmen Tafoya is a writer and former Texas and San Antonio Poet Laureate. She worked with artist and illustrator Thelma Ortiz Moraida for The Donkey Lady, A Graphic Parable. The novel is the first teen young adult title for San Antonio-based Aztlan Libre Press. Hear a longer conversation and hear an excerpt of The Donkey Lady read by Tafoya at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. The program is produced by Marianne Navarro and Norma Martinez. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and the Fronteras podcast. I'm Marianne Navarro with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.